Good morning, friends. Welcome to the program. Hey, Lou.
How are we doing today? Very good. Everything's very good. We're coming to the end here, aren't we?
Yeah, that's right. Today, we're going to be doing verse 63, 64, and 65, which is almost to the end of the Gita. Thank you, friends, for being with us throughout. This is like a lot of the Gita sort of summarized in these verses to some extent. So let's start with verse 63, which says, "This topmost, utmost secret of all secrets was told by me," Krishna says, the Self-Realized Soul, God says to Arjuna, "this utmost, topmost secret of secrets was told by me to you, more secret than any other secret. This knowledge is explained by me to you. Consider it completely and then do as you wish." Each one of these words is very important. So, first question is, you're talking about the Gita? Hmm. You're saying that you told an utmost, topmost secret of all secrets in the Gita? I don't remember that. What are you talking about? Why is this a topmost, utmost secret? What are you talking about? You've been telling us about how to get to the Brahman, how to seek Atman, how to become self-realized. What secret? Why topmost secret? Look at how analytically he comes to this conclusion. Number one, it's an utmost, topmost secret because this knowledge is hidden. The average person doesn't know it. Education, you can go to Harvard, you can go to colleges, you can go to any place, you can get all the education you want, but you don't know about the Atman, you don't even know the Atman. So that's why it's a secret, right? Mm-hmm. Now, you go to somebody who teaches the scriptures, you go to a Swami, you listen to these lectures, you explain everything about the Gita, but you've heard it all, you can repeat it, but you don't truly understand it. Right. It remains a secret even after it's been told to you. Then it's more secret than a secret itself because you don't understand it. So I gave in the last one of these previous episodes the example of my grandson when he was about 2 years old. His parents, myself, all the grandparents, all of us, we were going on a large vacation together. Everybody was excited, talking nonstop about going on a vacation. And he kept running around the house saying, "We're going to vacation, we're going to vacation." So we didn't understand that he didn't understand what vacation meant. And then when we were in the plane, he said, "Is this vacation?" He said, "No." We landed in some warm Caribbean island. And we were in the car, and he's pointing to different things. He says, "Is this vacation? Is this vacation?" Everybody kept saying, "Yeah, yeah, this is vacation." And finally, he pointed to the ocean, blue Caribbean ocean waves. He says, "This is vacation?" Then we understood that he didn't really understand, although he had been saying the words vacation, vacation, vacation over and over. He didn't understand what vacation meant.
Right.
When he finally understood it, that's when he realized it. So after that, of course, now he's 9 years old. He understands what vacation means very well. He's always looking forward to it. But only when you understand the concept of Atman, Brahman, Spirit, only then you realize it. Till then, you're just mouthing the words. It's a secret, even though it has been explained to you. People say, "This is a vacation, honey. This is a vacation." Doesn't understand it. It's a secret.
And it occurred to me in the last episode that what makes it most difficult to understand is that it doesn't activate any of our senses, the way we relate to things, the way we understand things. It doesn't activate any of our senses. So we have to come to an understanding that's beyond all the tools we normally use. Makes it very difficult.
Yes. In fact, the scriptures say, look, you cannot expect to understand Brahman through your senses, through your mind, through your intellect. This is incomprehensible. You can only become Brahman. You cannot understand or comprehend or perceive Brahman. So first was this knowledge is hidden. Education, going to Harvard doesn't reveal it. The second was, even if it's explained to you, you don't understand it. If you don't understand it, it's a secret to you. And the third, he says, is this knowledge of Atman has to be revealed and will be revealed only to that person who decides to look for it. Now, I could go to somebody's house and I see something that I've never seen before. And I say, hey, what is this? I've never seen this before. Then because I saw it, it hit me in the face. Looking at it, I bumped into it. I say, what is this? And he says, oh, this is such and such. Oh, I didn't know that. Now I know it because I saw it. Atman and Brahman don't appear to you like that. You are looking for something. If you're looking for it, it's not because it's hitting you in the face. It's not because you say, hey, what is that? It's something you don't see. You have to go looking for it. That initializing that process of knowledge of Brahman is known in Sanskrit as mumuksha. Mumuksha is the desire to gain this knowledge of Brahman. And that mumuksha turns into jignyasu, a person that has this knowledge, and somebody who chooses to know and to find Atman. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's a topmost secret of all secrets. Then Brahman says, Krishna says, consider this carefully. What does that mean? He says, this knowledge is explained to me by me to you. Consider this completely and carefully, and then do as you wish. So why does he say consider this completely and carefully? Shankaracharya says that for every one unit of what you listen to, you have to have a 100 units of contemplation and thinking about it. So throughout, I think we've said in these lectures that you have to do shravana, manana, and then nididhyasana. Means you have to listen, then you have to think about it, contemplate on it, and then meditate on it. Mm-hmm. So consider this carefully means listen to what I've told you about this topmost secret, then contemplate on it 100 times more than you've listened. Repeat this over and over and over and over again till you understand it. Intellectual understanding is not enough. Understanding in such a way that it changes your personality. You know what is right. How do you know it's right? Because it is your dharma. When you read like this, the Gita, when you listen, by study of the Gita, of the Upanishads, of your scriptures, you understand by your study what is right and what is wrong. That is known as your dharma. That is known as what is wrong and what is right. So you understand, you know what is right and what is wrong. What is wrong? That is your dharma. But you feel like doing it something different. If you feel that what you feel like doing and what is right, your dharma, both are in sync with each other, then you become peaceful and happy. So what you feel like doing should be what you ought to be doing. And when those two are in sync, you're in happiness. So in this Gita, again and again, it has been said that Gita is the light of knowledge. Even the people who translated it from the British going back hundreds of years ago said the Gita is the light of knowledge, the light of enlightenment. And instead of using other people as a guide with a flashlight, he says, be your own flashlight, be your own guide, be a light unto yourself, be your own guide, and let that light carry you through life. So that was verse 63. Now comes verse 64. Verse 64 says, once again, listen to my supreme word, the biggest secret of all secrets. You are beloved to me, so I will tell you what is best for you. This often results in some controversy because here Krishna is saying to Arjuna, you are beloved to me. He says, wait a second, I thought God didn't have favorites. And he doesn't. God doesn't have favorites. God is consciousness and we are all consciousness. Here in this story, in the Gita, Krishna and Arjuna have always been very close. They've always been friends from childhood onwards. In fact, Krishna and Arjuna are cousins, but they're also friends. At the time of the Gita, when he was in the middle of the Mahabharata war, and Arjuna went from being just a friend to also being a student. He says, teach me why what I'm saying is wrong. Help me. Then he becomes, as he gets respect for Krishna, he becomes a devotee. So he says, as a result of that, I consider you to be one of my beloveds. I love you. You are beloved to me. So I will tell you what you need to do and what is best for you. So he's saying that if you are devoted to me, not that I love you and I hate somebody else,
right,
but he's basically saying, look, when you're devoted to me, you will feel the benefits coming from me as if I'm saying, I love you, therefore I'm giving this to you. So the entire Gita is to pursue this knowledge. And the more dedicated you are to Krishna, to this knowledge, the more you will feel, quote unquote, the love. So in the Gita, Krishna says, do your duty, do your karma, become a karma yogi. And another point he says, withdraw from the world, withdraw from your likes and dislikes and become a sannyasi. In the second chapter, if you remember, he talks about Sankhya Yoga and Jnana Yoga. He says, listen to me about Karma Yoga in the second chapter. In the third chapter, he says, Jnana or knowledge is for the sannyasi, somebody who leaves and goes away to the Himalayas. And he says, Karma is for the Karma Yogi. Here he says, you're beloved to me, listen to me, and I will tell you what is best for you. What is best for you is moksha, liberation, the knowledge of Atman, the knowledge of self-realization, and the way to get there. So that was verse 64. Now let's do verse 65. Verse 65 says, this is a very, very important verse. Place your mind in me. Number one, be devoted to me, Krishna says. Place your mind in me, be devoted to me. Sacrifice to me, bow down to me. Those are four, right?
Yep.
I promise you that you will come to me because you are dear to me. So again, let's go with the last one, that you are dear to me. He's basically saying, if you do all these things, you are really devoted to me. Therefore, you are dear to me. Therefore, you will come to me. Not because I'm saying I care for you, you come because of your actions.
Right.
In the Upanishads, in the Vedas, and everywhere that you've seen, all self-realized people, all self-realized beings have followed these four dictates. Very, very, very important for you to know. That's why it's in verse 65 towards the end. He says, place your mind in me. Very important. Listen to this. Place your mind in me, the Supreme Lord. Number two, he says, become my devotee. Number three, worship me. And number four, do namaskar to me. Okay, we'll go through this. As I said before, Brahman and Atman is awareness, is consciousness itself. What does that mean? We say, I am the knower. This object is the known. Mm-hmm. And this is knowledge. Knower, the known, and knowledge. But awareness and consciousness is common to all these three. Awareness and consciousness of the knower, the known, and the knowledge, awareness and consciousness. Without awareness, without consciousness, there is no knower, there is no known, there is no knowledge.
Right.
And that awareness consciousness is Brahman. I am conscious of this noise that's around here. But what is making me aware of that, what is making me conscious of that is my awareness, my consciousness. That's Brahman.
Mm-hmm.
So number one, to say, place your mind in me, let God be in your mind. Constantly think of the Supreme. If you don't like the word God because it has connotations to you from early childhood of something different than what it is, then use whatever works for you. It should go in so deep into your mind that it even penetrates into your unconscious mind, that you're constantly, constantly, constantly giving everything up to God. It's always there. Then it actually starts to, you really start to believe that you are God, that you are Brahman. This should penetrate deep. Otherwise, you're just saying it, aham brahmasmi, aham brahmasmi, I am Brahman, I am Brahman. You're just saying it.
Right.
You know, it's like, let's go vacation. So consciously, number two, consciously develop the love for God, for Brahman, through bhakti and devotion. Develop that love. Constantly think about it. How? By doing seva. Not just constantly thinking about it, but also serving God in all the other beings that you see. Whether they be animals, birds, human beings, that is all God. If you do duty, seva, service to God in those other forms, then you are becoming God's devotee. Number three, worship. How do you do your worship? Do karma yoga. Do your service to the community, to poor, to other beings. That's, again, worship. And number four, he says, bow down to me. Do namaskar to me. What is namaskar? Very fascinating. Everybody does namaskar, which is fold your hands together, bow down your head. And we don't know really what it means. What namaskar means is broken down into Sanskrit as na-ma. Ma means me. Mama means mine. Na-ma means not me. Namaskar means I am bowing down to you as this, not nothing is me, nothing is mine. Nothing belongs to me. Namaskar is meaning God and I have become one. And to get there, your mind has to be very pure. No desires, no emotions, no fear, no anxieties. There is a fourfold way to reach God. One is through karma yoga. One is through bhakti yoga. One is through jnana yoga. And one is through dhyana yoga. So karma yoga, you're actually doing service to the community, to God, to the God in all beings. Bhakti yoga is devotion, completely praying and having faith. And number three is jnana yoga. You're studying as you're doing now, learning. And number four is meditation and dhyana. When you do all of the above, friends, and you are devoted to the Supreme, that devotion will eliminate your likes and dislikes, your raga and dvesha, by doing that devotion. How? Because you are doing what you ought to do, that which has to be done, not what you like to do versus what you don't like to do. You are doing what ought to be done. And hopefully, what you ought to do is what you like to do. Your knowledge also becomes very much clearer. And as your knowledge becomes clearer, your likes and dislikes start to dissipate. Mm-hmm. And you basically like exactly what you ought to be doing. What a fantastic way to end towards these verses as we get to the end. And it is true. You can only know this when you speak to people who are on their way to getting to this point. And until that point, and you, only when you get there, you start to say, I've moved from point A, not to point Z or Z, but I'm maybe just a little bit past A, and I feel so much better. I feel this. That's when you will become convinced, my friends. So, Lou, what do you think?
Yes. Yeah, a couple more episodes to go. Right? Yeah. This is such, and it's basically just about that devotion. When we use words that to us in the West, especially the Western religion, mean other things, so it's so important to reorient them. Devotion, I think, means just having your focus going towards Brahman, going towards that level of consciousness, as opposed to the things that are in front of you every day, the illusions.
Yeah. I mean, devotion in India, people think of devotion, faith, as going to a temple and, you know, just basically taking flowers and coconuts and fruits with you and giving it to the priest and say, oh, I'm so devoted. Here's the fruits. Please give me some prasad back. And he gives you back one apple out of the fruits you gave him. And you just put your hands together and you say, okay, I did my duty. Now, who can I fleece? How can I raise my prices in my store? That's not devotion.
Devotion is not ritual. Devotion is focus.
Yes. Yes. So friends, thank you. And thank you for listening. And we will see you next time.